Hey, NAIA football fans, Corey Thorpe here with another edition of the NAIAF Ball Podcast, powered by AdCraft USA, your custom apparel, merch, and uniform experts. Our friends at AdCraft have been with us for many years now. They've run web stores for us multiple times. These guys are NAIA fans and family who are experts in the apparel and merchandise world. AdCraft allows you to take the hassle out of ordering. Let their knowledgeable design and customer service staff handle everything from hosting the store online, shipping the product, and helping your customers so you can get back to the game. Find them online at AdCraftUSA.com. All right, NAI football fans, this is Corey Thorpe back with the final edition of the NAIAF Ball Podcast this offseason, wrapping up with a bang tonight. We have Austin Bennett, championship manager from the NAIA, on with us just to talk the state of the game, both of conventional football and women's flag, and just get an overall 30,000-foot view perspective on what's going on league-wide as a whole. Austin, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. Been trying to get this together for a couple years. Glad to actually be able to get this done. Let's start off with flag, since we're coming out of flag season into football. I know I had seen an article right at the end of flag season that about 50 teams had announced their intention to start a flag team within 5 years. Are those numbers for real?
Yeah, those numbers are for real, and they might be a little low as well. Really excited about where we're at. We're coming into the 22-23 season, or 23-24 season, excuse me, with just under 25 teams, which is really exciting to be that close to invitational status so fast. But again, yeah, the conversations we've had, that kind of 3 to 5 year outlook, we're looking at anywhere from 50 to 75 programs that could start it, which would obviously surpass championship status and really have it off and running.
And just for the folks at home that may not be familiar with us throwing around these terms like emerging and invitational and championship, where do you have to be to hit invitational?
Yeah, so to be invitational status in the NAIA, you have to have 25 institutions sponsoring it as a varsity program on campus. So kind of being all in for the sport. And so once you get there, you kind of really start to get treated like a championship. We start to create those paths for automatic qualification at larges, the whole process there. We kind of shrink down, if you will, the championship field to more of a structured bracket play or postseason that you would see in other sports. And you do that in a build up to get to that championship status, which is at 40 institutions sponsoring it as varsity. And then you're full fledged, ready to roll, just like our other 28 national championships.
It's just so exciting seeing that and seeing the NFL come along and sponsor that. Is that something that as we get into the invitational and the championship status that you really, y'all see the Shield coming along for the ride?
Yeah, it's been tremendous. The partnership with them dating back to the January of 2020 is when it all started. We met with them and they kind of gave us their pitch on what does football look like in the next 100 years. And it was football for all. And obviously that includes flag football and women's flag football. And we were quickly able to mobilize with their help to start it and have kind of our initial 13 to 15 schools that onboarded it pretty quickly there during the pandemic. And to have their continued support, it's opened so many doors, both to resources, to funding for our schools, as well as the Atlanta Falcons and that partnership that we've had for the last handful of years and hosting our finals event down there every year.
It's absolutely been a great event and definitely one that is growing in how it's put on. RCX is doing a good job with that. I mean, I will say it's getting better. I mean, you have homegrown announcers now that you've got coming out. Not to pat myself on the back too much, but
So absolutely, it only adds to the opportunities and to the excitement of the sport for sure.
So let's switch over to the men's side, the conventional side, where I think this has got to be the biggest change to the championship format that we've seen since the coalescing of the two divisions into one.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and it's the perfect time for it. The sport has kind of continued to grow over the last, I would say, decade, if you will, in the NAI, and just adding more conferences, more teams, et cetera, that it really dwindled the opportunities for at-large teams to qualify. And so for us to expand and to modernize, I think is really exciting. We continue to be on the forefront of kind of how our postseason's done. You see it at the Division II level where it's kind of they're in their regional pods, and we have a little of that to a certain extent, but to be able to see some really cool matchups throughout is really exciting to be able to expand that and bring even more teams. You talk about the emergence of the teams out west, and the Pacific Northwest is kind of on its way back. And then obviously the Sun Conference, we saw what Kaiser did last year and the run they went on going up to Tennessee and Bethel and winning, and then also winning twice in Iowa to make it to Durham. It's really exciting to see, and to expand those opportunities to 20 teams is going to just add to that excitement.
Absolutely. And just to make sure that everyone at home is on the same page, we are working with a 20-team field where as long as you win your conference, you have an auto bid.
Correct.
And so with 13 divisions, that leaves you 7 at-large spots this upcoming year.
Yep. And in the past, to get one of those automatic bids as a conference champion, you had to be rated in the top 20. That stipulation's now gone too. So every conference will be represented, which is really exciting. And then yes, to have 4, if not more at-larges compared to previous years getting in, that's really going to add to the opportunity for our student athletes and our teams.
And we see coming online within a couple of years, Simpson in Northern California. Just going to throw it out there. What are your big, hairy, audacious goals for Flag in the next 5 to 10 years? Are we looking to maybe see if we can get some of these California teams back and maybe get the GSAC or the CalPAC on board?
In Flag football?
Or the conventional game?
Yes. Yeah, so I think Flag football, I've said this before and I truly believe it, I think Flag football will become our first fully adopted sport by membership. So whenever that time hits, if it's 245, if it's 250, if it's 300, I think you'll see it as the first fully adopted sport. And I think there'll be some exciting news on the Flag front coming out west here in the coming months. So keep an eye out for that, which would be really cool. And then on the football side, on the men's side, I think as schools continue to drive enrollment and look for ways to add things on campus, I think football will always be an option. That's a great enrollment driver, not only for men on campus, but successful football programs drive additional students to campus as well. And so I think that will always be the case, and I think it'll continue to be prevalent. And you know, we have William Woods coming on next year, starting a program from scratch, and so it's really cool to see that. And I think that's a model that you'll see continue to happen over the next 5 to 10 years in the NAI.
So looking at the larger picture of the conventional game and especially the championship, you know, we've been in since the last year of having the championship in Daytona. We went for a couple of years in Grambling, and we're in Durham, and from what I hear, looks like we're going to be back in Durham again this year. Just talk to me about, you know, finding a city that you can stick in for a while. For a while there, it was one city for a significant length of time.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we're all about the finding a great student athlete experience. Obviously our game doesn't fit in, you know, the Caesar Superdomes or whatever you want to call them, the Mercedes-Benz Superdomes of the world, which is just fine. That's not who we are, but we want to give a similar feel to our student athletes for their championship experience, particularly that national championship game. And so until obviously going from Rome, Georgia for a while to Daytona, I think for 4 or 5 years, to Grambling, not at Durham, you know, Durham's done a great job with the host committee there, the Durham Sports Council, and Marcus Manning and his team of trying to create a great student athlete experience and a feel to the championship. And that's something we're excited about for this year. And that's something we'll continue to push the envelope on. You know, we have our game on ESPN3. Is there a linear network we can look to get on? You know, things like that is kind of where I want to get to. It'd be great to find a home for an extended period of time. It's a big lift in hosting a national championship football game. And so whether that's Durham or whether a couple of years down the road, that's someplace else, we're not going to stop until we find what really amplifies our championship game and our student athlete experience.
And I know y'all do prefer that. I mean, you look at the other two kind of big sports you've got. You're always in municipal auditorium for basketball, and you know, LC does an amazing job of hosting baseball. If you ever tried to move from Lewis Clark State, there'd be a riot. So definitely want to, if you can find a spot, be perfect.
I think so. Even if it's a rotation of a couple spots, I mean, you see how the college football playoff rotates, you know, things like that. I know obviously the FCS has found a home down in Frisco and things like that. And so whether it's rotating, you know, between two or three places, or it's finding a permanent home. Again, we're all about chasing that student athlete experience and again, blowing up the sport the best we can.
So one of the things that I'm probably going to hear pretty repeatedly, and I'm sure y'all have too, is with some of the closures that we've seen in the last year, how do the grace periods work for conferences such as the North Star, where you're now actually below an auto bid level?
Yeah, so actually it's good timing for this question. So at convention, the national convention this past year, legislation was put forward and passed that there's a 2-year grace period for a conference that drops below the 6. And so that's what you'll see with the North Star this year. They will still have their automatic for their conference champion. And so I think in kind of the midst of the post-COVID world, school closures, you know, we've had schools combined with others. We've obviously had some departures, things like that. I think that opportunity that our memberships provided the schools to be flexible and the conferences to be flexible and still have an opportunity to hold on to an AQ is important. And I also think it's something that in this sport in particular, obviously is really important. I mean, it's 13, you know, conferences in football, and to provide them each an opportunity to directly qualify for the postseason is really important.
Definitely. And it's not something you see even at the Power 5 level. There's a reason it's called the Power 5. You know, you've only got 5 conferences there that are really vying for anything. So it's definitely a different feel in the NAIA, and I absolutely love it. Now, in terms of recruitment on that end, who technically leads the charge there? Would it be the home office and trying to figure out, hey, can like Viterbo or someone add football? Can we find a D3? Or is that going to be kind of a North Star or a partnership of the two trying to find a good fit?
Yeah, so I think when it comes to recruiting new members into the NAI, it's an all-encompassing effort. You have your conference commissioners, you have, you know, local ADs that have their ear to the ground. We have a newly bolstered membership sales team here in the NAI as we added a vice president of membership sales who actually came from one of our NAI member schools. And so he's been on the road pretty much ever since he started out, meeting with potential members, meeting with ones who have been interested for a while in applying and things like that. And so while we don't necessarily pick a member just because they have football, I think it's something that obviously we're going to start to attract. I think we'll see it in this next cycle. We're really excited about some of the conversations that team has had. And so I think it's always awesome to add members. And personally, as a football guy, it's always awesome to add members with football. And I think just you hear the conversations like we talked about earlier with adding a sport like football. I think these schools, our schools, are going to explore, you know, what they need to do to you know, add new student athletes to their campus. And through our Return on Athletics initiative that we have, we provide a great resource there to show how your school will compare or will look when you add a sport such as football or any sport, and what the returns would look like and what it could do to your bottom line, to your school, to everything. And so I think we've set ourselves up in a really good spot between membership sales, Return on Athletics, and what we're doing with student athlete experience to really be attractive to a lot of schools potentially coming to the NAI, but then also to our membership and kind of re-recruiting them and why they need to be a part of the NAI.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, the reality is, if you look at the 10-year data, the number of institutions of higher education in this country, it ain't growing. No. It is definitely, the trajectory is downward, and I feel like, you know, the NAI is uniquely positioned to catch some of these colleges that might have some, you know, they can see the storm brewing on the horizon. You know, how does the NAI really help, really drill into that return on athletics for me?
Yeah, so we have, obviously, with our member sales team, they have a lot of opportunity to go out and speak to different things, such as the differences between the NCAA and the NAI and other associations that we look to pull schools from. We show them the bottom line. We have the bottom line calculator, which shows, okay, if you're coming to be an NAI institution, here's what you can expect. You know, you don't have the $1 million to $2 million compliance number that you have to have in your budget to be a part of the big blue dot. So you instantly save money there, have an opportunity to save money there. And I think we also show a lot that they speak to is what does it take to be competitive? You know, if you're at, we'll take the Power Five out, but say you're at a Division Two, the numbers that as far as money spent and things like that to be competitive and money you have to bring in is significantly higher than what it is to be competitive at the NAI level for similar returns as far as students on campus. And so just sharing those stories, making comparisons, showing like institutions in their area, in the NAI, is kind of really where we're at and what I think is starting to become a differentiating point. As you see, I won't say the NCAA crumbling, but I think you see a shift coming in the NCAA with those Power Five institutions and kind of puts us in a good position for maybe when that money leaves or isn't the same as what it has been, that we're a very attractive option and a great opportunity to come and compete in the NAI.
Yeah, I mean, the facts are clear. I mean, you know, everyone loves a great super conference at the Power Five level, but the fact is that more conference games mean fewer of well, at that level they're called cupcake games. At our level they're called money games. Yes. You know, and so that money flows downward. I mean, even at our level we'll find the D2, the FCS school, that's a money game for these institutions, and with that not occurring, that cuts out a significant revenue source, and it's definitely something where you've got to make sure that you're a lean, efficient institution.
Yes, absolutely. No doubt on all accounts.
Well, Jeff, I know we've asked, you know, Avila this, but, you know, y'all are in Kansas City. What is your go-to barbecue spot for that Kansas City barbecue?
Oh, Joe's Kansas City for sure.
What are you getting at Joe's?
I get the Z-Man. It's got the brisket, it's got the onion rings, barbecue sauce over the top. It's every single time, that's what I get.
What flavor of barbecue sauce is your persuasion? You a sweet guy, you a hot guy?
I kind of go back and forth. I enjoy the hot to a certain extent, maybe on the sandwich with the hot, but then I like dipping my fries in barbecue as well. I don't know if that's weird, but I'll do that more on the sweet side if I do that.
Look, I dip my fries in mayonnaise sometimes. I'm not gonna
there
judge.
You go.
Favorite non-barbecue place in KC?
Oh, man. So in Kansas City, it's kind of in the Midwest. It's, I think, a little in Texas, too. We have this Jazz Louisiana Kitchen. It's actually really good. They have kind of that Southern, that New Orleans-style cooking that you can't always get, especially up our neck of the woods. But I would say that would probably be my favorite non-barbecue.
Nice. And all right, let's see if I can make some people mad here. Royals or Cards?
Oh, Royals all day.
Oh, man. Ain't neither of them doing worth a crap this season, unfortunately.
No, they are not. Nope.
Go Braves.
There's a reason why we split four games so far this year. We're equally bad. So.
I hear that. Go Braves. So, again, Austin, thanks for coming on. It's an absolute treat, and I know that you know, there are a lot of folks out there that definitely want to hear some of the big picture stuff and see what's going on and what they can expect. I mean, honestly, the biggest thing from our perspective is getting the name out there and making sure that, you know, people know who the NAI is and you know, that it's not just like some lesser division.
100%. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think the work you guys are doing is tremendous. I can't thank you enough for what you do and promoting coming to the championship and things like that. And the work you guys do on social media and highlighting our institutions and our players and our coaches. It's awesome. And it only adds to what we do. And like you said, it really showcases them, the level that we play at. I always tell people, I mean, we play with Division II schools very regularly and beat them. You know, we're not below Division III, I'll tell you that, as far as talent on the field and performance. So really appreciate what you guys do and everybody that follows you, listens in, all that. It's there's a big love for the NAI out there, and we want to continue to amplify that for sure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the NAIAF Ball Podcast, powered by AdCraft USA. Be sure to contact them for all your custom apparel, merch, and uniform needs. Thanks also to our newest sponsor, Telemetry Sports. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe to the podcast and to our YouTube channel, and leave us a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. As always, if you'd like to support what we do, head over to patreon.com/NAIAFball and become a patron. We can't do what we do without our sponsors and listeners like you.